10. Caro's bedroom, identical to Watkins's, was a whitewashed box, too small for anything but a bed, nightstand, chest of drawers, and desk. One window facing the courtyard, two doors to a bathroom, and a closet that would have been inadequate if Caro had cared much about clothes. But unlike Watkins's room, someone had hung the window with blue curtains and covered the bed with a cheerful blue and yellow quilt. A vase of yellow wildflowers stood on the desk. Probably James's doing. She must remember to thank him. Caro left her suitcase unpacked. She set her laptop on the desk and Googled. George Weigert, now 76, had been born in London and educated at Eton and then Oxford, where he'd taken a double, first in physics and mathematics. He'd stayed on at the great university and done research resulting in a long list of respectable articles in peer-reviewed physics journals. Married to Rose Lee Bessborough, a distant cousin to the royal family, who'd died 16 years ago. After his wife's death, Weigert moved to the United States and, like Watkins, dropped out of sight. Julian Day, Aidan Eberhardt, Ben Clarby. Nothing notable on the latter two, except for graduating with high honors from, respectively, Caltech and MIT. Much more on Julian, 35, who'd apparently been some sort of boy wunderkind in Silicon Valley, where he'd developed software that Caro had never heard of, but which seemed to be a very big deal. 8 years ago, he'd started his own company. 5 years ago, he'd sold it for a sum that made her blink, and then he left the tech world. David Weeks, board-certified neurosurgeon. A month-old article in the local paper reported his death from accidental drowning. Ralph Egan, Camilla Franklin, both legitimate medical practitioners. Caro found nothing suspicious about the compound. So what had the police wanted with Julian? She called Ellen. Hi, sissy. I'm here in one piece, and I need a reality check. Great. I specialize in reality. What's the place like? The island is gorgeous. The compound has more security than the Pentagon. Everyone is being nice to me, but...
Angelica! No, sweetie.
Oops, gotta go. I'll call you back when I can.
Kayla, come talk to your aunt.
Caro understood. Half her calls to Ellen were interrupted or terminated by Angelica's sudden, urgent needs. There was no way around that. Not if you were as devoted a mother and as poor as Ellen and had a child like Angelica. Kayla picked up the phone.
Hi, Aunt Sawbones.
Kayla. Did you learn that from your mom?
Yes, Aunt Skull Wizard.
Kayla giggled, the delicious giggle of a 9-year-old, and Caro's heart lifted. If I'm a skull wizard, you better watch out that I don't put a spell on your head.
I can run faster than you, Aunt Gray Matter Cowboy.
More giggles. Maybe, maybe not. When I see you again, we'll have a race.
Okay. Guess what happened at school today?
You tell me. Kayla did, at length. A convoluted story involving people named Lucy and Morgan and Noah, a bracelet made of straw that was or was not ineptly braided, and a flurry of notes passed during math. Caro gave up trying to follow the particulars. Periodically, she made encouraging noises, enjoying her niece's high spirits, which seemed to have recovered from classmates saying they would not play at Kayla's house. Kayla finished with,
"And then Noah said he liked Olivia better. He really said that."
"Wow," Caro said. "Had there been an Olivia in the story?"
"I know. And tomorrow? Oh, gotta go. Mrs. Foster is here."
"Who was Mrs. Foster?"
Caro said, "Put your mother back on." "Can't. She's still in the bathroom with Angie. Bye. Love you."
"Love you too," Caro said. So, no reality check with Ellen. At least not at the moment. Caro would need to think alone. But not here. The bedroom felt too claustrophobic. The room, the compound, the situation. She went outside, across the deserted courtyard, through the gate to the central wing. Still, no one, although clatter and voices came from the refectory. Caro smelled cooking. The last food she'd had was a gluey burrito at the Miami airport, but food had never mattered much to her. Would anyone try to stop her if she left the compound to take a walk? The thought was ridiculous. She wasn't a prisoner. The front gate was not locked, at least not from this side, and the young woman staffing the security office merely nodded as Caro left. She started down the unpaved road. The sun drifted behind wispy clouds, muting its brassy glare. A small green lizard flitted across the hard-packed dirt. Well-worn trails branched off into the trees, which was reassuring. People hiked here. Caro took the third trail, wider than the others. Everything looked green. She remembered that October was the rainiest month in the Caymans. She saw more yellow blossoms like the ones in her room, plus flowering bushes she couldn't identify. After 15 minutes, sweat trickled down the back of her neck and into the cleft between her breasts, but she also felt calmer and, yes, more rational. What was she so agitated about? She didn't need to share these people's beliefs about physics to participate in any legitimate research, no more than she'd needed to share the religious or political beliefs of her colleagues at Fairleigh Memorial. She would listen to the rest of Dr. Weigert's explanations, assess the legitimacy of the research and the possibilities for conventional brain mapping, and then make a decision whether to stay or not. She was a free agent. As free as someone could be with crushing debt and family obligations. Around a bend in the trail, Caro rested under a slender tree only slightly taller than she was, leaning against the trunk so that the large, dark green leaves shaded her. She could smell the ocean, but neither see nor hear it. 5 more minutes and she would hike back. Take a bath, have dinner, sleep. Tomorrow she would be fresher to think about all this. Her eyes closed, opened, drifted closed again. Another claustrophobic room, filled with flowers. Too many flowers. Sickening sweet. Too many people. 3 of them women. Black ocean water rose in the room, swirling, grabbing at the women's black clothing, threatening to drag them down. Only it wasn't the ocean, wasn't water at all. It was a toxic black fog that stung and pierced. A fog of Caro's own making. She'd caused it. And Mother said, and Ellen said, and Caro said, and said, and said. Caro snapped awake. Something large crashed along the trail. She jumped up, her head brushing leaves. Were there any dangerous animals on the island? Why hadn't she checked? If Ben Clarby rounded the bend. Oh, Christ, no! Doctor, get away from the maiden plum! The what? A sudden acrid odor drifted on the warm air. Did you touch it? You did. Okay, take off your clothes. Carefully! Don't touch any cloth with black sap on it. That's maiden plum, and every part of it causes itching and burns. You released sap from the leaves, too. They're really fragile. I can smell it. Take off all your clothes. Carefully. Here. He peeled off his shirt, threw it at her, and turned his back. Caro felt no itching. Was this some sort of crude hazing ritual? But black sap from the tree trunk had stained the back of her clothes. Caro peeled off her thin tee. Sap had soaked through to her bra. She shed bra and skirt and put on Ben's shirt, long enough to cover her nearly to the knees. It smelled of male sweat and insect repellent, mixing with the sharp odor from the tree. She said, "Leaves touched my face." "Not good. We need to get you back immediately. Look at the trunk. It's exuding sap from bark damage, and you just leaned your back against it."
"How was I to know? I'm not a botanist."
"Precisely," Ben said, without sympathy. "Didn't you think to tell anyone where you were going? Come on." A jeep waited at the end of the trail. then threw a tarp over the passenger seat for Caro to sit on. She said, "Expected symptoms?
You're going to itch like crazy for up to 2 weeks, starting tomorrow. If you're really susceptible, you'll get open sores. Do you get poison ivy bad or light?"
"I've never had poison ivy." Ben glanced at her incredulously. Apparently, he assumed everyone spent a lot of time outdoors. Caro felt ridiculous. A mere 4 hours on Cayman Brac, and she'd morphed from a doctor into a patient.
"What is the irritant in the plant called? Is it urushiol?"
"I don't know the medical name."
"Is it water-soluble?"
"No. Brac has a lot of plants you want to avoid. Trumpet vine, also called jasmine flower, rosary pea, manchineal, hippomane manchinella, which is really dangerous. Ponce de Leon died from it. The fruit..."
Caro interrupted this show of botanical erudition.
"What is the protocol for contact with my particular plant?"
"The protocol is that I take you to the compound where Camilla Franklin will take care of you."
The nurse, whom Caro had already offended. This just got better and better. But Camilla was brisk, very professional.
"You got here within 2 hours of contact, that's good. You'll get some skin penetration, but not as much as you could have. Wipe your whole body with this."
She handed Caro a canister of Technu. "The infection is systemic?"
"It can be.
After the Technu, the best thing for the itching is lime juice, but it'll only help so much."
"I don't feel itchy."
"No, not for about 24 hours. Depends on how much contact you had, how susceptible you are. You didn't touch your eyes, did you? Even accidentally, such as swiping away sweat?"
"I don't think so."
"Good.
Wipe yourself down now. Put your clothes and that shirt..."
"It's Ben's."
"Not anymore. Put it all into this bag. Shoes and socks, too."
Caro's only other shoes were sandals, not good for outdoor walks. But she did as she was told. When she emerged from the bathroom, she said, "Camilla, thank you for not treating me like, well, as if I should have known better. My rotations didn't include tropical medicine. You've been great." Camilla broke into a huge smile that changed her entire broad, stern face.
"You're welcome, doctor. I've lived in the Caymans my whole life, seen lots of maiden plum dermatitis. You're our neurosurgeon, not a dermatologist."
Our neurosurgeon. The next morning, after falling into exhausted slumber and sleeping later than she'd intended, Caro lay in bed, feeling the room grow warm with the day and thinking over what Julian and Dr. Weigert had said yesterday. A multiverse, branching each time an action was observed, including by the person doing the acting. Each branch represented all the possible results of the observation that had occurred, just as every possible outcome could occur every time an electron was observed. Until the observation, the electron was just an indeterminate bunch of possibilities. Observation collapsed it into a particle or a wave with a definite position, and it continued on its path. So, according to Weigert and Julian, did alternate branches of the universe, as created by computer chip and human decision. How many times had Caro herself made one decision rather than another? She could visualize her life as an infinitely branching tree, with each branch a path she might have chosen. What if her mother had not said that terrible thing at Caro's brother's funeral? If Caro had not lost her temper? If family anger, seething for decades, had not erupted into chaos? What if she and Ellen had not been disinherited? What if she hadn't chosen to go to med school, but some other career instead? What if Ellen had married someone who wasn't a scumbag, or had not birthed Angelica, or had chosen to institutionalize Angelica and gotten a job? Those and a million other decisions, observations in Weigert's language, would have resulted in very different paths through life. Well, all that was obvious without evoking quantum physics, trees, paths. Everyone was familiar with those metaphors for life. But Julian and Weigert argued that those paths did exist, or could be created, she was still fuzzy on this point, in different branches of the multiverse. Also, that Julian had actually done so. Electrons might not become matter until someone observed them, but Julian was not an electron, nor was she. Only, wasn't she made up of electrons and atoms and molecules? And the tiny electrically charged particles in her brain that mediated neural transmission of information to each other. Those particles that controlled everything she experienced and thought. Weren't they subject to quantum effects? They were. That, at least, was well-established science. Weigert's theory, what she'd read of it so far in his folders, made sense. It was based on known experiments, and she could find no flaw in the reasoning. She said aloud, "I am made of quantum foam that has been collapsed into Caroline Soames Watkins." No, she thought, "I am made of confusion." Caro reached for her phone and called Ellen. No answer. Caro left a message, then followed it with an email. Suddenly ravenous, she made her way to the refectory. Breakfast hours were nearly over, but kitchen help, who spoke minimal English, served her oatmeal and coffee. Caro would bet they were well paid to report to the compound each day, but also that none of them ever set foot in Wing 3. She wondered who cleaned there, who tended the one straggly flower bed. Picture Julian, or Dr. Weigert, or Ben Clarby with a mop or trowel. Julian dropped into the chair across from her. Caro braced for teasing or reproof about yesterday's skirmish with the maiden plum tree, but Julian said only, "Good morning. Dr. Luskin is going to check you out when he finishes with Sam. You didn't touch your eyes, did you?"
"No."
"Good. Slept well?"
"Yes, thank you. Is Dr. Weigert around? I'd like to ask him some questions about the multiverse."
"Ask me instead. That's why I'm waylaying you before George can. I'm saving you from the terror of equations. Also because, as the only person that David Weeks implanted with our computer chip, I can answer your questions about the operation." "Which I'd like to ask Dr. Egan, an actual neurosurgeon." He smiled. "Of course. Nobody ever said I was qualified to give any information about cutting into people's heads, not even my own. But I know, Caro, that you've done similar surgeries to implant chips for direct brain stimulation to control tremors from Parkinson's disease."
"Your research on me is very thorough," he said.
"My research on everything is very thorough."
And went through a quick, exaggerated pantomime of horror at his own immodesty.
Caro couldn't help laughing. "He was a gifted actor," she said with mock, strict teacher severity. "You stop that right now, young man." He folded his hands and looked meek. "Yes, ma'am." God, she was flirting with him. But he really did have a wicked smile. And those eyes. She made herself turn serious. "I do have questions about your implant, both surgically and subjectively." "Subjectively is easy. There is a recording of what I experienced in the alternate branch of the multiverse."
"A recording?"
"Yes," he said with his easy smile. "You saw our state-of-the-art deep image reconstruction equipment on yesterday's tour of Wing 3. It records the images experienced in the brain as consciousness enters an alternate branch of the multiverse."
"Good," Caro said,
although she actually had no idea how to regard this new wrinkle in an already complex situation.
"I'd like to view that recording. But first, another kind of question. How long does Dr. Watkins have left?"
4 to 6 months.
About what she'd expected. "You've worked with him a long time?"
"He and George founded the project 15 years ago. They were best buds at Oxford.
I came aboard a few years later.
15 years. Well, that explained why both Samuel Watkins and George Weigert both dropped out of sight about then. Although, best buds hardly seemed the appropriate terminology for either of them. I'd like to see your recording now, if I may.
Of course. We can... Hello, Ralph. I don't think you've met your new boss yet. Dr. Caro Soames Watkins? Dr. Ralph Egan, your backup surgeon. Temporarily, anyway.
Egan nodded at Caro and plopped into a chair, obviously bursting to say something.
About that. I'm afraid I won't be here to have a boss. The hospital asked if I can report to L.A. earlier than we'd agreed on. One of their surgeons died, unexpectedly, of a burst aneurysm, and they want me to come 2 weeks from now. I hate to leave you in the lurch like this, just as Dr. Soames Watkins has arrived, but if you agree...
Julian took a moment to react, but when he did, his congratulations sounded sincere.
We can spare you. We'll fast-track the surgical schedule, and we're already interviewing another surgeon. Congratulations, Ralph. Uncle John will be ecstatic.
Egan talked about his new position. It was the kind of offer Caro had once hoped to receive, but that, of course, was irrelevant. She congratulated Egan. The left side of her face began to itch. She scratched it. Julian said,
About the surgical schedule. Lorraine is still first. Maybe this afternoon you can bring Caro up to speed on whatever surgeons need to be up to speed on, and the two of you can operate tomorrow.
Egan said to Caro,
I have all my and David's data, including Lorraine's pre-op charting. I'll email it to you, doctor, and we can go over it together if you like. What time is good for you?
Events were moving too fast. Caro was not going to operate tomorrow. She hadn't even said that she was staying here, a decision she would make only when she had a lot more information. But there was no harm in looking at Egan's data, which might help her decide exactly what to tell Julian.
1 o'clock?
Fine. We can meet in the hospital lounge. If you'll excuse me, I need to make some phone calls. Nice to meet you, doctor.
He hurried off.
Caro said to Julian,
Uncle John?
Ralph is my first cousin once removed. Lorraine, your first patient, is my sister. It keeps security tight.
Why is tight security necessary?
Julian leaned forward, his elbows on the table.
Caro, this is a groundbreaking procedure. The surgery itself is not complicated, or so Egan assures me. In fact, it's probably far below your talents. But it's brand new, and although eventually we'll trumpet it to the world, at the moment there are no regulations covering this. We have to be cautious.
And you have to be out of the United States to do any of this at all.
Yes,
Julian said, and now his smile was not quite so pleasant.
Do you want to see my recording now?
Yes.
She rose and followed him, ignoring sudden itching on her back. Nothing in Wing 3 looked any different from yesterday. Julian said,
You told me you're familiar with EFMRI, and maybe you already know that the Deep Image Reconstructor uses machine learning with deep neural networks in order to decode a hierarchy of complex brain activity from the EFMRI images. Then a generator network boosts the images and refines them. A recording is made, which comes out like a video, in the same way that animation used to be created for the movies, a rapid series of images. Before even my first session, I trained the DIR on the personal visualizations in my brain. I spent 122 hours lying on that bed there.
He pointed to the cot.
While viewing increasingly complicated images. A cat on a fence, a cat poised to walk along the fence, a cat on the ground, a cat.
I get the idea, Caro said.
When the outputs from deep image reconstruction almost exactly matched the pictures I was being shown we moved on to moving images, the cat leaping off the fence. Eventually, the machine could reconstruct anything I thought about while I was hooked up to it.
It can read your mind.
The visual brain areas while I'm connected to the machinery, yes. Not, unfortunately, auditory areas. Lorraine has already undergone the same training. Her data is stored there too, along with that of the next few implantees after her. My team spent years programming the basic software. Later implantees won't need anywhere near as much time because they can piggyback on elements common to previous training. With each implantee, the machine learns.
Caro looked again at the hospital bed positioned between the EFMRI and the computer array. Cables lay across the pillow.
All at once, it looked to her like a grisly, high-tech torture device.
Julian said quietly,
"It doesn't hurt, if that's what you're thinking."
"I'm aware that imaging doesn't hurt."
"Of course you are. Sorry." The second piece of preparation, which took even longer, was programming software with information about the branch of the multiverse I would generate. For these initial efforts, the data we programmed to create the new branch of the multiverse kept it pretty much identical to this one, keeping it as simple as possible until we saw how the algorithms worked out. That data, or any other we develop later, is fed into the chip through this conductor bolted to my skull.
Julian leaned forward and parted his thick blonde hair with both hands. Caro saw it, the tiny titanium case which covered the ends of the connector wires leading deep into his brain. He straightened.
What's on the chip, inside my brain, are new algorithms to process information. Developing those took a decade. Then, the last step, David Weeks implanted my chip.
Caro stared at him. He made it sound so clear-cut, so linear, which it couldn't possibly have been. Brain research didn't work that way. Brains didn't work that way. There must have been false premises, failed paths, endless trial and error frustration. Julian said,
"Think of it this way. A single conscious observer can completely define the quantum blur, leading to a collapse of its waves of probability into a new branch of the universe. And I was that observer, in that universe. Not my body, of course, which stayed right here, but my consciousness. And I controlled what I created. I could change that branch of the multiverse at will, because physical reality depends on how many observations are made and how densely they are packed together. George will have a lot more to say about that. The important point is that the universe I'm about to enter is real, and my consciousness created it." His voice held a note of exaltation that made Caro uneasy. He seemed to be gazing at something only he could see. "When I returned, which was when the computer was switched off, the universe I generated went on without me. I brought it into being by observing it, but after me, there were many other observers in that universe, which I'd also brought into being. People, animals, birds."
"In other words, you think you became as a god?"
"I don't think. I know."
"It was too much," she said. "How do you know it wasn't just a hallucination? A really powerful hallucination that seemed real to you? You could have saved billions of dollars by just taking LSD.
He laughed, unoffended. "Caro, somehow you don't strike me as the type to ever have dropped acid."
She hadn't. Even her undergraduate years had been more about studying than partying, but that wasn't the point.
"Julian, you think this is just megalomania, don't you? Or wish fulfillment, creating designer universes? It's not. It's serious research into how reality actually functions. A coherent theory that will change science forever." Some of it, of course, is uncharted territory. We're finding the proof as we go along. Right now, we have my recording, the first one ever, of consciousness creating reality. I want you to see it.
He activated the screen of the massive computer.
This first part, obviously, is just ordinary video.
On screen, Julian lay on the bed. Aiden Eberhardt stood at one bank of screens, and a tall black woman at another. More people stood a few feet away. Cables connected Julian's skull to the machines. Caro thought of altar sacrifices, although Weigert, hovering near, hardly looked like a bloodthirsty priest, and surely Aztec sacrificial victims hadn't worn jeans and an Armani polo. She thought she might be slightly hysterical. Weigert nodded, Julian gave a thumbs up, and the screen went blank for a moment. When it brightened again, the image wasn't quite as sharp, although completely recognizable, as if seen through a light scrim moving in a barely perceptible breeze. This same room. Julian stood, the cables gone from his head. Weigert and all the others had vanished. Julian walked to the door and opened it. Beyond lay not the conference room that Caro knew to be there, but the courtyard of Wing 3, ringed with its covered walkway, all the doors closed. The weedy flower bed was as Caro remembered, but next to it stood a huge ornate fountain, water burbling over rocks crowned with carved, semi-naked people and agitated horses. The whole looked vaguely familiar. Where had she seen that gaudy gusher before? Julian strolled to the fountain and held out his hand. Water spurted over his fingers. From his pocket, he drew a quarter and tossed it into the spray. Trevi Fountain, in Rome. Caro had seen only photos. She'd never been to Rome. Had Julian? The fountain looked detailed and clear. A door opened, and Weigert emerged. He and Julian shook hands, Julian grinning and Weigert beaming like a lighthouse. The recording ended. Julian turned to Caro and said, "Well?" "Well, what? I still don't see why that isn't a recording of a detailed, remarkably weird hallucination that the DIR recorded from your mind."
"No," Julian said. "It was no illusion." "Look, Caro, I can't prove to you with hard evidence that it actually happened. Not yet, anyway, until we have more implantees and can analyze their results. And what I'm going to say to you next isn't something Weigert or Watkins, both scientists, would approve. I'm a scientist, too, but I can accept that there are ways of experiencing that don't meet lab criteria of experimentation, but nonetheless are real. Haven't you ever experienced something that had no scientific basis, but you nonetheless knew had definitely happened?"
She lay, at 6 years old, seven, on a blanket in the back garden, watching clouds drift across the sky. Then, all at once, the clouds were no longer there, and neither was Caro. She was nowhere, and everywhere, woven into what she later thought of as the fabric of the universe. She was the clouds, the grass, the breeze, the ant crawling across her arm. Everything was her, and she was everything. Carefully watching her face, Julian continued, "One of those lab criteria, incidentally, is replicability. The same experiment yielding the same results. This isn't my only DIR recording. I revisited this branch of the universe two more times, and the recordings are identical. Are drug hallucinations or dreams or any other altered states known to psychology ever exactly duplicated, days apart?" Caro's back and face itched again. Her own childish altered state in the back garden. Dream? Hallucination? Delusion? Had never occurred again. But it had happened, which proved nothing.
Her itching grew worse. Julian said,
"These first creations of a multiverse branch will all be similar to this one because it takes less programming of the chip. But eventually, with enough information available to consciousness as it leaves this branch, an implantee could recreate the past. Enter a previous era in your life, or even the life of the planet. You could recreate a previous event and have it turn out differently than it did here, in a branch that would continue after you leave it. You could enter a universe in which you never tangled with a maiden plum tree. Think of it, Caro. You can relive and alter the past. Not only in imagination, but in a conscious reality as solid as this one."
A claustrophobic room, filled with flowers. Too many flowers. Sickening sweet. Dark ocean water rose in the room, swirling, grabbing at the three women's black clothing, threatening to drag them down. Only it wasn't the ocean. Wasn't water at all. It was a toxic black fog that stung and pierced. A fog of Caro's own making. She'd caused it. She said, more forcefully than she intended,
"Some pasts should not be relived."
He stared at her before saying gently,
"That's true. But you can create a past in which your brother did not die.
It's..." "Stop," Caro said. She was not going to discuss Ethan's death with Julian. She and Ellen didn't even talk about it, although that was Caro's choice, not Ellen's. But the terrible funeral and the even more terrible aftermath came back to her in dreams, as it had when she'd sat under the maiden plum.
"Sorry,"
Julian said,
"but it's so important that you understand these basic ideas. Your brain isn't seeing anything out there, because there isn't anything out there except a cloud of quantum information. Your brain uses its hardwired algorithms to collapse the wave, many, many, many waves constantly, and so generate reality inside your head. There are many possible chains of brain activity, but the algorithms in your head limit your experience of them. Nonetheless, they still exist as possibilities, something even medieval philosophers sensed. For matter is never lacking privation, and inasmuch as it is, under one form, it is deprived of another."
Thomas Aquinas.
"My brain chip changed the algorithms that usually deny me walking access to all but what we think of as this reality."
"So you're saying that instead of Trevi Fountain burbling away in a courtyard in the Cayman Islands, you could have erected the Eiffel Tower in Times Square, or the Hanging Gardens of Babylon in a suburban mall?"
"Put like that, sarcastically and simplistically, it sounds ridiculous. But so did quantum mechanics when it was first introduced, and Darwin's theory of evolution, and most other revolutions in scientific thinking. And let me repeat, Caro, that in terms of surgery, implanting my brain chip is no different from your work implanting electrodes for medical deep brain stimulation."
"It's completely different," Caro said. "DBS is therapeutic,
and this is valuable, groundbreaking scientific research. World-changing research."
"I'm a doctor, Julian. I save lives, not experiment on them."
"Compassionate use is medical experimentation. Your uncle is dying."
She gaped at him.
"To call this compassionate use? Those exceptions to FDA standards are only for experimental drugs for terminal patients."
Julian said carefully,
"This research is Sam's life, and advancing it before he dies is a form of compassionate use."
"That doesn't even... I can't begin to say..."
"Lorraine, plus your neuroradiologist, anesthesiologist, and nursing team are already on their way here. Caro, please consider.
another voice said.
Julian, don't.
Neither of them had heard Weigert enter the room. He walked to Caro and put a protective hand on her shoulder. She looked up at the understanding in his old eyes.
Give her time,
Weigert said to Julian.
Remember how long it took you to accept all this. Caroline has had less than 24 hours.
Yes, of course, Julian said. He looked as if he might say more, but Camilla Franklin rushed into the room like an exploding volcano. There you are, Dr. Soames Watkins. I've been looking all over for you. Dr. Luskin is here to look at your exposure to... Oh, Lord, don't scratch. Come with me. Dr. Luskin is waiting, and you need lime juice right now. If you have a preparation of... Lime juice works better. Oh, here she is, doctor. A tall, gangly man followed Camilla. Caro's urge to scratch was intolerable. Dr. Luskin tilted her face to the light, careful not to touch her skin.
Let's go somewhere I can examine you. But I can tell you right now that Camilla is right. You need lime juice.
Julian said.
And then, Lyle, Caro can perform surgery?
Luskin looked at him.
You should know better than that, Julian. She can't operate until I'm certain she won't develop open sores. At least a week.
Caro said to Julian, I told you that I haven't even decided if I'm staying. Why was she having so much trouble convincing anyone of that? Weigert said,
Julian, we need to let Dr. Luskin perform his examination, and I believe that Aiden Eberhardt is looking for you.
Caro looked at Weigert as he intervened, diffidently but definitely on her behalf. His eyes were kind in the creases and ridges of his old face. Although he wanted her skills for this project as much as did Julian and Watkins, he would not pressure or bribe her. And, for the first time, he had called her Caroline. Thank you, she said to Weigert, and followed Dr. Luskin from the room.